Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Stu and the Nun, and what an episode it is, and I am so glad my brother from another motherland, my partner in crime, my home slice himself, Mr. Toby Nun, is here with me for this 40th episode. Hey, Toby, how you doing?
You know, brother, I'm great. I'm on the central coast of California today. We just got rained on, so it's awesome. A lot of answered prayers for this area in the San Luis Obispo area. I'm out here with Mighty Oaks Warrior Programs, doing the Fight Club program for some guys from the Wounded Warrior Battalion West of the United States Marine Corps. So pretty cool week, and I'm excited that I'm still able to call in, and that we are on our 40th episode. That's crazy.
It is. It's our third radio show over 7 years, but this one has been going strong. And, yeah, we are. So you're in California. I am in Delaware tonight. And so we are coast to coast covering this show. And being as flexible as we are, our guests can call in from anywhere. Our listeners can listen from anywhere all over the world. And they still can partake. So with that being said, we have a great show for you tonight. Let me tell you this. We've had some phenomenal guests on this show. We've had, generals, four-star generals that nobody can get interviews with, awesome special operators that, would only give interviews with us after they retired. We've just had some phenomenal guests, guys like Jim Bohanson and Dave Bellavia and Tom Amenta and Jack Mandeville, so many great folks. But boy, do we have a show for you tonight. There's only 6 survivors of the USS Arizona that went down at Pearl Harbor, the famed USS Arizona. There are 6 survivors left, and the gentleman we have tonight, Mr. Lauren Bruner, is one of those 6, and he is the oldest at 95 years young. He lives out in California, and the same home he's been in for 50 years, lives by himself, and is just an outstanding young man that is just doing great things. He is not sitting back in the rocking chair waiting for life to be done with him. He's continuing to give back and honor and serve his fallen sailors, his fellow brethren on the ship, and we're going to talk a lot about that tonight. And so it is, we're just so excited and honored and flattered to be able to have him on here and tell his story and talk about all the great things that he's doing. And I can promise you this is not going to be the only night you hear him on the show. We've got so much stuff to cover with Mr. Bruner that we are already planning several episodes to have him back on over the next several months. So we are we're glad. It's stoked. Can you believe it, Toby? Can you believe that we, have such a time capsule of history that's going to speak with us tonight?
Yeah, no, like so I, you know, I was just in the green room, you know, talking to, you know, one of his counterparts, Ed, and it just, you know, I was trying to explain to some of the guys I was with, like, you know, I tell them, like, you know, who we're talking to, you know, it really just one thing, the excitement in their eyes, knowing that, you know, we have this amazing guest. And then for us, you know, it's like, how cool, like, this is the neat part, this tangible part of history, like you said, like a time capsule. But let me hop in the green room real fast and talk to our callers real fast.
Okay, I'll put you in there. And we put Toby back in the green room. And let me tell you, there's a lot going on in the world. Again, it's another election night. We have a primary going on in Washington. Things are heating up. Attacks are happening. I tell you, it is not slowing down. I hope you guys can hear us. I see the chat room talking. Can somebody give me a good comm check out of the chat room? And all right. Wait, hold on a second. Let me throw another one over there. Hold on a sec. All right, sorry. I have multitasked, and Toby is not in front of the studio, so I'm running the studio solo while he's trying to coordinate people in the green room. We have callers coming in. So I've got a lot of stuff going on here. You know, walk and chew and bubble gum are a little bit tough. So, okay. All right, we got good comms. We have good sound. Mark is telling me he can hear me 5x5, which is top shelf. That's what we need to see. So let me tell you, we're blessed with a great night. A lot of stuff happening. I don't think we're going to get a chance to get to our bald man rant at the end. So, Toby, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to just take a minute or two and kind of just cover something that's near and dear to my heart. But before I do, I want to see, is there anything you wanted to cover? Just assuming we're not going to get a chance at the end of the show.
The you know, I could go on and on and on about, like, some of these shenanigans that are going on in terms of bathrooms. But I really don't want to, because I'm just super excited. You know, we got Lauren and Ed, you know, in our green room right now, and I'm ready to talk to these gentlemen and get them on the air. I'm super excited about tonight's show.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so let me just make this real quick. Yesterday I put on the Facebook page for my site, boothammer.com, and I got a little spunky on there, but I was very upset what I saw. And I thought, I guess I was on the cutting edge, Toby, and I was one of the first ones, because it has blown up since then. But the comments by the VA secretary, Robert McDonald, when I saw his comments comparing waiting at the VA to waiting in line at Disney, and questioning why people are looking at the wait times at the VA because they don't care about the wait times at Disney rides, absolutely infuriated me yesterday, to the point where I dropped F-bombs on my Facebook page. And I do that very rarely. In person's a different animal, but on public sources, I rarely do that. But it just irked me to no end that you know, this guy who's in charge of the VA, who's supposed to be turning it around, an organization that has got both eyes blackened through their own incompetence, that we both have experienced, and many of our listeners have, and probably a lot of our guests have, compared the Disney lines waiting for It's a Small World or Magic Mountain or something with guys that are the men and women that are dying waiting on a – literally – that, you know, in Arizona and other places where they get called, your appointment's ready, and they've already passed away because they've been waiting for weeks and months, if not years, for their appointment. Or guys who need help, guys and girls that need help and are thinking they're at the end of their rope, and they call for assistance and talk to someone in a crisis, and they get an answering machine or no one responding, and they decide to end their life because they think, well, there's really no one that cares or wants anything. An organization that has done that, that is literally responsible for the lives of some of our greatest warfighters, the people that have raised their hand and volunteered to give their life for this country, but have went off and done it and came back, but instead lost their life while waiting to be fixed and taken care of For that gentleman to make such a statement and compare it to a line at Disney, I don't know how the president didn't call for his resignation at that moment. It just sickens me even talking about it. But I just had to get that out there.
Well, you know, I completely agree with you, and I started laughing because, you know, one, Disney actually do care about wait times. maybe they don't, like, you know, publish those metrics, but they track those metrics. They track the metrics in terms of how long it takes for someone to get off a shuttle, you know, from the parking lot to, you know, like, have their wristbands, you know, scanned or their ticket scanned, you know, to get it, you know, upon entry, and then they care about the wait times, and they adjust lines accordingly to, you know, do traffic flow. So they're actually mitigating, you know, the time that people are stagnant on their resorts. Unlike the VA, we're not mitigating this at all. And so the comments are just absolutely asinine. And this guy, you know, this is probably the eighth time that I can think of that he's stuck his foot in his mouth, and he clearly is not qualified or prepared to lead the largest institution within the U.S. government, the federal system, being the VA. And he absolutely should resign or should be removed and replaced. He's just completely missing the mark.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to get that in. It was really passionate to my heart, and I know yours too, so I want to make sure we get that in, because I know we're going to spend the rest of this time just hearing great stories and learning great things from our guests. So I would like to welcome on, without any further ado, our guest, Mr. Ed McGrath, Lauren Bruner, and Mark Common to Stew in the Nun. If all three are on, I'm not sure, but let me unmute them and bring them on. And Mr. Bruner, are you there, sir?
I am here.
Oh, great to hear from you. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your Tuesday evening and coming on the show.
Okay, good.
Ed, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, good. And then we're expecting Mark to call in, or is he on with one of you guys?
Yeah, I expect that he should be calling in just any moment.
Okay.
Be happy to go right ahead.
All right. Sounds good. Well, again, you know, Mr. Bruner, we've been talking about you. We've been really promoting this. We're so honored to have you on. And I guess, you know, the best way to start, I mean, we know that, of course, you're one of the last few, literally few, survivors from the U.S. Air Arizona. But you had a long career, from what I understand. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of giving our listeners a little bit of summary of your career, because I know it didn't just end in 1941. You continued on for a long time. Is that right?
Yes.
Lauren,
so can you give?
I was going to just say, Lauren, why don't you tell them about after you recovered from your burns off the Arizona and how you got onto the Coghlan and what happened?
Okay. I was supposed to get 8 months in the hospital after Pearl Harbor. But after 7 months, the guys come around, they said, hey, we're lacking some people of your category. You're waiting and everything. I would like to have you stick around and pick up a new ship, even a new destroyer this time. I said, well, whatever you need, I'll be here. So they bundled me up and took me over to the docks in San Francisco, where I picked up the USS Coghlan, DD-606, and I went aboard. They had a special doctor, and a farmer's mate for me. So they I gave him my billet, and away we went. Started out towards go to Pearl Harbor. Got one day out of Pearl Harbor. We got change borders. Alaska. They were having Japanese just trying to land up there. So we go up and interfere. And spent 10 months through the winter in Alaska and the Aleutian Islands and the Bering Sea. And this is rough, rough, rough. After that, we came back down to Pearl Harbor. And started with the picking up the troop ships to take them out to do their landings. In the meantime, we were bombarding for them on the way. And this went on for several months, and all of a sudden they got orders change back up to Alaska. The Japs had a full fleet trying to come over to Alaska. But we didn't, the U.S. didn't have enough ships to do a real warfare. So we had wound up with two old cruisers and four destroyers. And we hightailed right on up to Alaska, went out on the Aleutian Islands, and cruised around a little bit. And then went a little farther over towards Japan, right along the Siberian landscape there, around Kamchatka Peninsula. We started picking up some activity, and we finally found the Japanese fleet, and it was a fleet. They had four destroyers. Four destroyers. Four battleships and four cruisers. And they were escorting about seven ships. Shiploads of troops heading to Alaska.
Lauren, you may want to just mention to him what the battle was called that you're going into.
The Battle of Kahotoski.
Oh, wow.
And that's when his destroyer won their first battle star.
Yep. That was it.
Now, Laura, what was your exact job in the Navy?
My job was Navy flight operator. I had the all the range finders, everything, communications directly to the planning rooms, and I could give them all the dope what's going on. What they could.
There we go. I just want to let you and let our listeners know we brought Mark Common on. Mark is on, too. Welcome, Mark, to the show.
Oh.
How we doing, Lauren? Hi, Ed. How you doing,
okay.
Dave?
Mark, he's just telling about the Battle of Komodorsky.
I was listening, and that's such an exciting story. I was wanting to hear Lauren tell it again. I mean, I've only heard it 100 times, but I never get tired of it.
Well, one more world than that.
Oh, yeah, Lauren, please tell us and our listeners about the earning of the battle star.
Well, we tangled in with the Japanese they set four destroyers and two cruisers to battle it out with us. And that was they had more powerful than we had at that time. But we were shooting back and forth for 4 hours steady.
Holy.
And we got down.
Would you say, Lauren, almost point blank range, right?
We're getting down to point blank. We had been in and out, close in, and then back off a little bit, then go in again. So we started to get down short on ammunition. So the and also their ships had hit one of our cruisers and said it it was completely stopped because the shell pierced the side of the ship right at the water line. And that was right where the oil was.
Oh.
And so they had to shut that down and then try to repair that and then get ready again. But the skipper gave us orders to form a line, a torpedo line, four destroyers. And we had two new destroyers and two old destroyers. The two new destroyers were at the front. We went in first, and firing continually until we got into 5,000 yards, which is point blank to the cruisers like that. And then we just turned on a dime all at one time and just dropped the all torpedoes and ducked behind a smoke screen. Well, we went back in to look after the other ships, see if anything was going to come through that smoke screen. Nobody showed up. Finally, the wind kind of blew, started blowing the smoke screen off where we could see. Well, the Japs had disappeared. They did no part of those torpedoes all coming to them at one time from four different destroyers. Each destroyer had flipped four torpedoes each. And so in two banks of two at a time. And so anyway, they took off.
Toby, so, I was going to just... Toby?
Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say that during this time, Lauren had been wounded with two machine gun rounds in his leg at Pearl Harbor during the Battle of Pearl Harbor. And the battle he was describing on the Coghlan, he was almost won his second Purple Heart. Lauren, tell him about that. What happened?
When the Japs hit Pearl Harbor, first thing
No, I'm talking about up at the Battle of Komodorsky, when you almost got hit again.
Oh, okay. There was one of the bigger ships started shelling us, shooting. I think it was one of the cruisers. But they weren't doing any good at hitting us, but they come mighty close to us. But one shell came in, is right behind us, and busted. scattered metal parts all over the ocean. Some of those metal shards went through the protective armor that was on the ship up where I was. It just banged around all around the place and finally came to rest. It was spinning heavily right in the middle of my back. I had all my foul weather gear, my heavy coat, and two or three shirts, and almost everything that I had on, because this weather up there was between 55 and 60 below zero.
Oh.
And you couldn't breathe outside weather until you had your mask on, which was a quarter of an inch of straight heavy wool, which is a slit for eyes and mouth. And that's all air you could get at one time. You didn't want to take a gulp of air at all, and it would down you. But we finally got out of everything there, and the Japs had all turned back to go back to Japan, troop ships and all. And we got a memo later that our intelligence over there had reported that the Americans had some automatic ships. They just fire at will. And we were firing at will, but didn't seem like it was just about every 6-7 seconds. They jammed another shell in and fired at. But
wow.
It just got to.
So, Toby, what would you like to hear about Lauren's military career? Maybe as a young man at Pearl Harbor, what do you think is your
I think
those listening would like to hear?
I think it'd be, yeah, I think this is true. I think we'd like to. I know we kind of went forward, but I wanted to give our listeners I wanted them to understand that his service continued well beyond. But if we wouldn't mind taking it back to that day, December 7th, and what it was like that morning, and kind of some of the experiences that Lauren that you went through personally. We've all seen movies and we've seen all that, but you being there on the ground, some of the things that happened that probably will never be known or are never going to be in a movie. Is there anything that stands out?
Well, Lauren, why don't you tell them about how you started that morning and where you were going?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
They sounded the alarms to man your stations, and this is no drill. So all we knew is something was up, because we took off as fast as we could, and I was two decks down, had to run up on the top, and then six more stairs flights up, 80 feet up, and I could see all of the jet planes around. And I see the Oklahoma as it starts to tip over, and all of a sudden I see this one plane coming directly at us, and it was called a Benny, a bomber, but it had a three place people in it. And he just came through, and I guess he just seen me. He just banked the plane over to where he's almost perpendicular with his wings, and he got by it, and then he had aimed his gun at him two of those shells got me on the leg, my left leg. But I just jumped into the directory as fast as I could. That just, well, he hit me with a bullet, so that just stung. That was not going to be stopped for nothing. But anyway, it
it was a hell of a day.
Yeah, hell of a day is right.
So Lauren, there's an iconic photo of the Arizona as it's starting to tip, and I saw where you circled and marked the spot where you were. You were like up in a, like an anti-aircraft, I don't know what the name of it, you know better than I, but you were up in a spot high up on a mast. That was like your battle.
I was on the deck above the bridge.
Okay.
And that was a double deck there, because we had a captain, regular captain, plus an admiral. So the admiral has his own bridge. I was about 15 feet, a little bit to one side, just above him, of the admiral when the ship blew up.
And I would imagine, that was a horrific explosion. And I mean, were you hit by anything, or what did it knock you out, or, I mean, did you even remember? Did you see any of it?
It didn't knock me out. I had been on the range finder, looking in the range finder, trying to locate some of the planes around, and when the bomb went into the magazine, the powder magazine, that's what blew everything, and it is. Next thing I knew, I'm laying on the deck under the where I was supposed to be instead of standing up. But I bounced right back up, because about that time I felt a big fire ball come through the station there, and that just but burned everything up. And it got me 73% of my body.
So you were hit by two rounds out of a plane, and then burned on 73% of your body that day.
Yep.
And then did you end up falling? I mean, when the ship tipped, did you fall into the water? Did you end up having to jump overboard?
We were back away from the water, and we had a lifeline around us, which was not a rope; it was steel that you couldn't just fall through.
You mean a railing, Lauren? The railing around the director?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Toby, what it was is his crew of six were in the anti-aircraft director facing the channel. Okay? And there was a duplicate of that on the starboard side, and that was on the sky control platform. And so when the enemy dropped the bomb and the ship exploded, the explosion came up from the bottom of the ship and incinerated everything. It stopped at the sky control platform where Lauren and his crew sat with their director, because it was so thick, the metal. So instead of going through it, it went around it, and it went through the director on Lauren's side from the right to the left, like a fireball. And that's when he was explaining that it burnt the hell out of everybody.
Man.
That's something. So, you know, it is, I mean, there's so much we could talk just about that day, but I want to cover more tonight. And Lauren, I hope we're able to have you back on more, because I know our listeners, just like Toby and myself, could just sit here, just listen to you for hours. But you know, you have, you went on to serve, you continue serving the Navy and the country. And you're now at a point in your life where you're not stopping anything. You're continuing. I mean, can you talk a little bit about the audio recording, the guided tour that you're putting together, and a little bit about your dream gift to America and what that is?
Yeah, after going over everything at the ship at Pearl Harbor, at the memorial, we got to talking with Ed and several other ones around, trying to put something together maybe. Dreaming, thinking, maybe what we might be able to do, and it all came starting to come together. We wanted to put up a memorial, although they already had a memorial on the ship, but we wanted to have one on the island in Honolulu, where people could come and look free of charge over in the one in Honolulu there. You had to pay a good price to get into the base there to go see it. But we decided to do something like that, free of charge, or they could donate whatever they want. And it got word got to go around of what we wanted to do, and little by little, it's all beginning to gel up now. I got several projects going and coming up that maybe Ed could tell you better about. Ed?
Or Mark, well, Toby, what we've done is we've put together a narrated tour by Lauren of his ship, of the USS Arizona and the Arizona Memorial. So you're going to be able to go back to Pearl Harbor starting this summer, this June, and you'll be able to actually take a tour that is an app on your smartphone. And you'll be able to listen to Lauren tell all of his stories and take you onto his ship and explain how he used to live and also the attack and how he escaped the ship, which by military historians is considered the greatest escape of Pearl Harbor. And, you know, that's one of Lauren's projects. That's almost finished. He spent 10 months in the recording studio with me working on that. And then Mark Common sits on our board of directors. We started a foundation in Lauren's name so that we could honor the crew of the USS Arizona for all time and for all generations. Really, that's Lauren's goal. And so we put that together. Mark has been with us from the beginning and is a professional photographer and has probably taken 10,000 photos of Lauren. We've traveled all over the country together, including to Hawaii back and forth a number of times. Mark, why don't you tell them a little bit about what the foundation's planning?
Well, the foundation, it's pretty exciting, guys. You know, I'm just a small guy from a small town here in California, and to be able to spend time with Lauren is amazing. And I know, you know, Ed and I are blessed to be able to do that. We want to bring this experience to the future generations, because it won't be long before all of Lauren's guys are gone, and we want them to live on. So
yeah,
the foundation has been built to create the dream gift to America, which is Lauren's dream that the crew members of the USS Arizona, the ones who perished that day and the ones who survived the war and continue to live today, all of them that you can go meet them and you can see who they are. You know, because they were 18 and 19 and 20-year-old kids, you know, tasked by our country to protect us. You know, most of them perished on that day, never have any legacy. So the foundation has been researching. You know, in Washington, D.C., they've looked up the enlistment records. They've got most of the sailors on the Arizona that day, their enlistment records. Ed has found artists to create a reproduction of their likeness from original family photos. So we will have a wall of fame, so to speak, both virtually and physically, where you can see the faces of every USS Arizona sailor. And then
and Marine.
Spectacular.
Yeah, all the guys who were stationed on the ship. And you'll
all
be able to then
1512.
You'll be able to go to a computer screen and find out everything we know about them. Where they were from, what they liked, where their battle station was that day, and what happened to them. You'll be able to type in, you'll be a school children from a child from Minnesota will be in and said, show me everybody who was on the Arizona that was from Minnesota. And then you'll be able to see who's from your hometown, who has my same birthday as me. And it'll make those sailors come alive and live again, because we don't want them to be forgotten. You know, now there's a beautiful, touching memorial in Hawaii, in Pearl Harbor, that many of us have been to, and it's a marble wall with their names inscribed on it. And that's just a name. Just like, you know, we honor in the Navy, we honor the ships. But you guys know that the Navy is not about ships. It's not about steel. It's about the men and women who serve on the ships. They're the ones who make the ships live. They're the ones who fight the battles and protect us. They're the ones that need to be honored. So we want to honor the crew members of the USS Arizona and every sailor who's ever sailed with United States flag on their shoulder. It's a really cool project, and I'm honored to be part of it. And to build this project, we need your help. We need people to support the foundation, to tell other people about it. You know, because, you know, it's just Ed and Lauren and I right now spreading the word. You know, we have, you know, 7 or 8 of us on the board of directors for the foundation. We have about 50 people who have already donated. We need thousands of people to donate. And if all you've got is a dollar, we'd love to have your dollar.
All right,
that's what the foundation's all about.
So Mark, can you please tell us how we can do that? Like,
it's
how,
very simple.
How can we go?
So go to dreamgiftforamerica.com. Dreamgifttoamerica.com. Sorry, Ed.
That's all right.
And Ed, why don't you send right now to Stu and Toby the link so they can put it on their website right away. And you got it.
We're on it.
Yep.
You're on it. Cool. It's nice to talk to guys who are on it.
I know.
And then
I know.
You can click through. You can read Lauren's story. You can see a bunch of my photos. You can see some historical photos of the USS Arizona when it was in its glory and now that it's a memorial for all time. And you can be part of this amazing journey that we're on.
Well, I think also, Mark, tell them that, you know, or Toby and your guests, Lauren is so excited about doing this and creating the Dream Gift to America that any, like Mark said, if you can afford a dollar, we would love to have you, you know, pledge that. That would be great. If you could afford to make a donation of $100 through individually or a family business or something, then Lauren will actually autograph probably the most beautiful photograph of his ship, of the USS Arizona, and we'll send that to you as a gift for you all. I mean, it will be actually signed by Lauren Bruner and dated 12/7/41. So if, you know, you can, that photo is on the Dream Gift to America website. The difference is that actually the photo that you will receive will actually be signed by Lauren as his gift and a thank you for, you know, taking the time to help. That's all. The goal when we're finished, like Mark said and Lauren, is to have 1,512 sailors and Marines who served aboard the Arizona, who gave their lives on December 7th, so that they come alive. So when you touch their name, you're actually able to see what they look like, what town they came from. I mean, it's such an awesome project that it's no wonder the government couldn't ever do it. Because I was listening to what you guys were saying starting out this show, right? And this is the same exact thing. It takes somebody with heart and the reason to do it. But the government or the Park Service, it's way over their heads. They could never even think about doing something like this. And there are a lot of good people who work in government. It's just that your hands are tied every time you turn around, in my opinion. So,
well, I mean, it's very simple. You know, bureaucracy is designed in theory, you know, for the efficiency of governance. But it doesn't involve emotion. And what we're talking about is the legacy, a generation. We're talking about the legacy of these heroes, these war fighters, you know, those that perished on the ship. And to want to honor them, you know, there needs to be a tangible connection. And that's something the institution doesn't have. But as, you know, as military men ourselves, as our families who are patriotic families who, you know, are grateful for the freedoms, you know, they're grateful for the victory that was hard fought, and at the cost of that hard fought victory, you know, like a legacy is not only like earned, it's deserved and it's needed. And like you were saying, when, you know, someone says your name, you know, long after you're gone, you are still here. Your memory is alive. Your sacrifice is still remembered. It's still respected, and it's still being honored. And man, we're just super excited to help you all with this project. And, you know, if you're listening right now, please, you know, take the time, you know, go to Dream Gift to America as website, and, you know, get this amazing picture, you know, give what you can. But, you know, if you can have something that, like Mark was saying earlier, you know, every day that passes, we lose not just one, but many members of this amazing generation, you know, that inspired Troy and myself, and, you know, to be part of this. My grandfather, you know, he was with the British, but, you know, I wish I could have.
You wish you
could
have sat down with them, I bet.
Yeah, I wish I would have had more time with him. And, you know, so that's one of the reasons why, you know, Lauren, you know, we were just, sir, I feel awkward just calling you by your first name. Like, sir, we are just honored that you would take the time to talk to us, and we appreciate so much, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
well, thank you.
Toby, this is Mark, and one of the things you and your listeners have to be aware of, Lauren is a guy. He's an amazing human being. He's an amazing man, and he's a regular guy. And I, like you, every time I get to hang out with him, you know, and drink beer with him and go to our favorite bar in Hawaii, you know, I thank God every day for him and all those guys. But I also thank God for the minute that I get to spend with him. And I want – that's one of the things that Ed and I want, is for everybody to have – that ability to understand, you know, the book that I'm writing, that a book that I'm photographing on Lauren is called The Hero Next Door. Because he lives in his little house, the same house he's lived in for 50 years, and we want to share that with everyone, this amazing story about this amazing person. We want them to be part of it with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, like,
Lauren, you – oh, go ahead, Toby.
No, Troy, please.
Yeah, I just want to say, Lauren, you know, you've got the audio tour thing you do with the app. You've got You've got the book that's being coming out, working out, but, you know, you still go back. I understand you were just at the Dodgers game. There's a lot of special stuff going on in Hawaii. What is it like for you to be able to do this and still be here and represent the crew members? I mean, it must be honorable. It must be flattering for yourself to be able to be the face and be able to represent all those that were lost, those that survived but aren't here anymore.
Well, it is flattering, but I love the Hawaii and the people back there. I got I had 3 years before the war started, in which I was running up and down the streets in Honolulu and whatnot, or on Waikiki. But then I would get on 2 years on shore patrol, too. But I met an awfully lot of very, very nice people. And
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I just want to ask, I've seen some interviews with veterans from the Pacific Theater in World War II, and some of them have had some, you know, still harbored some resentment and ill feelings towards the Japanese people and all that and stuff. Some have just, you know, never been able to come to grips with it. I'm just wondering,
well,
kind of,
I know
what
it was.
What is your view on that?
One of the fellows that was in the director with me, he got a little bit worse burns than I got, heavier burns, but about the same amount of his body was covered. But he just never been able to get himself around to even talking decently about with any of the Japanese people.
But Lauren, explain to Toby how you feel about the Japanese people.
It was not the sailors' fault. The Japanese sailors, they were pushed into it, but there was a lot of them after the war was all over with. Now they sorry that they had to do what they do had to do. This is what I'm sorry we had to do a lot of stuff that we didn't want to do too.
The Toby, I was going to explain one of my favorite stories with Lauren is the night before December 7th, he was dating a pretty Japanese barmaid, and they had their first date up on the Poly, if the people listening know where that is. And so that he went to bed that night thinking he was in love all over again. They were going to meet the next morning and at 10 o'clock and spend the day at Waikiki, and then life changed, that's all.
It changed dramatically.
Yes.
But, yes, sir, I didn't mean to cut you off, Troy, but I really appreciate your sentiment about saying, like, you know, it wasn't personal. You know, it's not like you knew the guy on the other boat. And, you know, in my mind, you know, I was thinking about that battle and, you know, your 4-plus hours of those shells going back and forth. And, you know, those aren't little rounds. They're quite large. And, you know, coming in and out and, you know, going at almost point-blank range and torpedoes, you know, like, you know, that was pretty intense, you know, situation. But yet, you have the presence of mind to know that the guy on the other side, he's doing what his country's called him to do and, you know, what he's bound to do and for the belief system that he's, you know, defending you are. And, you know, it's not personal. It's not like, you know, there's a guy named Hiramoto that's saying, Lauren, I'm coming for you. You know, and it's just refreshing, you know, to hear that, you know, that's as a war fighter, you know, we get asked those questions quite frequently, like, how do we feel about, you know, people that we've been engaged in combat with? And it's, like, well, you know, not to quote General Patton, but, you know, like, our job was to not let them be successful. And I just really appreciate you sharing that with us because, like Troy said, you know, so many others have not, you know, been able to take that step forward. And just super proud of the way that you, one, allocated that, and two, that, you know, you live that life.
I just, like I was saying, there's this other fellow that I know of that was having so much trouble. He still cannot see or even talk to the Japanese people. But well, it's not going to be long before none of us get to talk to Japanese people like we used to do. I'm 95 and a half right now, so I haven't got too long to go.
Oh, at
least
Lauren,
another
don't
50
say
years.
That.
I was going to say, come
there
on, Lauren.
You know, I look forward to every day and every beer we get together, Lauren. You know, and I'm excited to drink that whiskey with you.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Well,
hey,
Lauren,
what is the beer? That's good to know.
Oh, so every time we go to Hawaii, there the Smith's Union Bar on Hotel Street is a bar where Lauren and the Arizona Sailors would go on Liberty, and that's a bar where Lauren was a shore patrolman back in the 1940s where he would break up fights. And we go there every time we go to Hawaii and sit.
It's never closed.
Yeah. We sit at the table, have a beer, and it's always a big party, and the locals come in and the Navy guys come in, and it's just a great time. And whenever we're in Hawaii, you know, we'll let your listeners know, and they're welcome to come and join us at the Smith's Union and hoist one in honor of the Arizona and the crewmen.
Heck, we can put the phone on speaker and share the story with everybody.
Exactly.
There we go. Well, hey guys, we are winding down here, and I just want to all my thanks from Toby and myself to Mark and Ed, and without a doubt, especially Lauren, for you guys to give up some of your Tuesday night and share with us and our listeners some of your stories about the foundation. The Dream Gift to America. Make sure you check it out, dreamgifttoamerica.com. And just let us get to know you guys. This is phenomenal. And I know, Ed, you and I are already talking. We're planning to have you guys back on some more because you just got too many things to cover in one episode.
Well, we're happy to be anytime you want. You know, Lauren is he's got great stories. You know, he's man enough to share them, so he wants other people to know the great generation.
Absolutely.
And
well,
going
yep, that's right.
Lauren?
And we're wanting to hold, as you said, only six left, so we're wanting to hold on him as long as possible.
Absolutely.
But, sir, thank you, Mr. Bruner, thank you so much. Ed, Mark, thank you guys, and really appreciate you coming on with us tonight.
Not a problem.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. You guys have a great night.
Will do. Same to you.
All right.
Thank you, Mark.
Toby?
Wow. You know, it just, you know, I'm awestruck. You know, I'm sorry that I'm so silent and just treasuring and cherishing every second of that. But good night. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, and we'll talk to you all next week, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, here on Stu and the Nun Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Stu and the Nun tonight. We're always grateful for our listeners, both live and those who check us out in the archive. Be sure to check out our website at www.stuandthenun.com and like our page, Stu and the Nun, on Facebook, and follow us, Stu and the Nun, on Twitter. And, of course, be sure to join us again next week and every week here on blogtalkradio.com/Stu and the Nun. Every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. You all have a good night.